that's forward. You've got to kind of point it at the...
Somewhere over there. Okay.
Point it at Robert.
Oh, sorry. So I pointed at Robert. Fair enough. Is there a laser pointer? No. So thank you for the invitation to comment on the report. I should stress I'm not with the Secretariat, so the comments are certainly my own. And what the report signals and what I'll focus on is a couple things. So first off, we see the membership moving into an area that is actually quite difficult but has potentially high payoff with success, but also adverse consequences with lack of success. So it's important. It's a hard area, but it's important to actually make progress. And so what I'll cover here is two main points. One is putting this whole topic in context in terms of what's going on in terms of trade and why this kind of agreement is actually important given the changes that we see in the trading system. Then I'll focus a bit on the messages to take away, at least that I take away from the report itself, things you should remember, and what's there. So in terms of trends, I'll focus a bit on what's been going on with global trade, not just the trade to GDP trends that we've been hearing in the press, but also a bit on how trade's becoming more complex, how this relates to value chains, how this in turn makes trade facilitation important and more so than it was even, say, 15 or 20 years ago. And then on that basis, then talking a bit about the report itself, the message, especially in terms of pro-development potential from the trade facilitation agreement. And finally, I'll just reiterate what's said in the report itself and what we've heard just now, which is implementation is actually quite important. Okay. So trends. We're in a situation where when I used to work here back when, we noted every year the trade was growing faster than GDP. Probably it was a trend that we knew couldn't continue, but it was striking in terms of its continuity, and now it's striking in terms of its absence. I mean, since the crisis, trade has been growing kind of at the rate of GDP itself globally. We don't see this acceleration we've seen. And in terms of giving some kickback to the gains from trade, one thought is dealing with these types of non-tariff trade costs may be one boost to the system. But something else happened over this same period, and it may also explain why we've seen until the crisis rapid growth in trade itself. These are just indexes of basically how complex trading networks are. These are measures for a given country of the extent to which it's trading with partners who are also trading with each other. This reflects efforts to measure the intensity of value chains and to what extent countries are trading in basically regional production networks. And what we've seen over this period, when we had rapid trade growth, was also more countries trading with each other and with third countries in a pattern involving trade in parts and components and intermediates. Most world trade is actually things that firms buy from each other to make stuff, right? It's not finished goods. And this, over the roughly from 1980 or the mid-80s until the mid to late 2000s, we saw dramatic reshaping in terms of how we make things. So if I combine these two trends, what we've got along with trade growing faster than GDP was this increase in complexity in production. More and more countries moving things back and forth across border to produce ultimately final goods, but it means that we see deeper linkages between economies. We've got regional production networks that span continents and ocean basins, so North America, European industry, Asian and Southeast Asian industry. And actually, this shift in how we make things also means the trade costs have different implications, especially for developing countries. And this gets to the points on why trade facilitation matters in this world that we now live in versus the one we lived in 15, 20 years ago. When I lecture on gains from trade, the standard views include efficiency effects, what we call pro-competitive effects, where we see countries taking advantage and arbitraging across their differences in endowments and technology to boost wages, to boost productivity. And there are certainly gains to be had here, and indeed some of these are in the report we have at hand. But in addition, there's an emerging viewpoint in terms of changes in how we produce things and the base for which we get advantages of scale and market size. Regional value chains mean that we can take advantage of markets on the production side that are the size of entire continents and regions, and that lets us produce goods at relatively lower costs to benefit, again, from specialization across the countries in the regions. That requires logistics and coordination, right? So one thing that's coming out in recent research is that services, communications, transport, the ability to move things across borders in a timely fashion, all of this matters if you want to be part of these production chains. Okay. If, on the other hand, if you have problems in these areas, if there are high border costs, then one risk with higher costs than we would have had in a simpler world with trade in final goods is that you have a risk of being locked out of these types of value chains, these regional production networks. Okay, you actually need to be able to move things in and out of country relatively easily. Otherwise, what you will see is the countries that are left out of this process, I would expect to see a widening gap in wages, a widening gap in productivity trends. So in that sense, this is a real challenge. It offers an opportunity, a pro-development opportunity, in the sense that for countries that can attach themselves to these networks, there are immediate gains to productivity because you're operating at a level of technical efficiency that then basically reflects the regional network rather than something that reflects your own national base. But if we fail on that, then the opposite occurs. So here's where the TFA comes in, right? So it addresses a number of issues related to integration in this world with production networks. And I cluster these in the following broad areas. One basically relates to reducing uncertainty. And this is actually a traditional function of the GATT/WTO system in terms of MFN, in terms of national treatment, in terms of knowing you're having arbitration mechanisms. So here also we're looking at the ability for advanced ruling so you know what the situation is when you engage in trade. Actually knowing what the rules are, which matters. Right? If you don't know what the rules are, there's a bit of uncertainty in that regard. Providing mechanisms for appeal, so what the rules say is actually what the rules do. Okay. And also advance knowledge on what fees you face. Again, to reduce firm uncertainty and risk, which is a cost to crossing borders. Another basic cost to operating cross-border is regulatory burdens. Whether it's paperwork itself, whether we can speed things up, and it's important to keep in mind we have rather strong evidence that time actually is money, right? That the longer something takes to do, the more it costs because there's opportunity cost hinged to transactions and to trying to move things around. So greater efficiency, faster procedures, transparency for trading firms, all those things reduce costs related to linking an economy into the global or regional economy. In this sense, within the agreement, trying to encourage cooperation with regional authorities. You can imagine that this would reduce the regulatory burden to the extent one can share here. And again, this would help promote more uncertainty. Now, with the facilities that are meant to be established under this agreement, we're looking at capacity building as a central message. Okay, this is in the report itself. This is stressed. Also, then, we're looking at efforts to share on best practice and procedures so that as we learn, we can share this with other trading partners and monitoring in terms of how all this happens moving forward. Again, there's this, in terms of implementation and in terms of more certainty in terms of what the regime is, monitoring is actually quite important. So what do we take away from the report itself, or what do I take away? First off, the economic benefits are potentially quite substantial. And having been guilty myself of estimating benefits from trade agreements, I'll put up a few caveats. One is you have to take the estimated income gains as, take them with a grain of salt or with a bit of skepticism, because for the high-income countries, some of this stuff is, we saw actually with implementation, some of this is already being done. So that may give us some overestimates. But on the other hand, given the kinds of models we work with, I think what's more important is we're probably underestimating the benefits related to integrating it into regional production networks. Okay, this is an area where work is new, where our sense is that it's a win-win thing in terms of getting more countries in, but I'm not convinced that we're managing to get these into our estimates of effects. Okay, so on net, I would just say the benefits of actually getting this thing through are actually quite substantial. They may be in ways we're just starting to understand, especially in terms of avoiding the marginalization of economies, low and middle income, that are not better integrated as the global economy itself has become more complex. And indeed, if we think about who's outside the parallel agreements and the mega deals, which again is the low and middle income countries, I see that this agreement and the multilateral approach is pro-development on a number of fronts. The really key thing is that implementation matters, right? Implementation is critical to the pro-development potential of the agreement, that actually, given that we've got changes in the way we produce things, this implies greater benefits if we can overcome the institutional constraints to getting the agreement itself agreed, but also then getting it implemented in place. And so the commitment by members, the commitment by sister organizations of the WTO to technical assistance, to ensuring that this can actually, that what's hoped for in the agreement can actually be realized, is actually central to the entire message. So, yes, and you see this through the report itself, that there is potentially substantial gain. I would see it as being more of a benefit for low and middle income countries. I see it. This is a case where I think it is win-win, given the nature of how the nature of gains from trade with production networks. And I in that sense, it's a logical multilateral topic or thing to be covered by such an agreement. But it's one thing to talk about potential, and it really does require commitment by the members and by the international organizations and development agencies and so on to actually make sure that what we see potentially is actually what's realized. So, but it's, yeah.